Welcome to Speak in Flow, the podcast that helps leaders like you unlock the power of your voice, achieve maximum potential and flow through exceptional communication. I'm your host, Melinda Lee, and I am passionate about helping company leaders and their teams master public speaking, pitching with impact, and stepping into their full leadership potential. Thanks for tuning in to the Speak in Flow podcast, which is the top 10% of podcasts worldwide. When you stick around until the end, I have an exclusive gift just for listeners only, something that will immediately help you and your team up-level your communication. Let's dive in. Welcome, dear leaders, to the Speak and Flow podcast, where we dive into unique strategies and stories to help you and your team achieve maximum potential and flow. Today, I have a truly amazing leader in the leadership development world. He's in the industry and he's out speaking. He's an author. He's a founder of Massimo Bacchus Leadership. Hi, Massimo.
Belinda, it's so nice to meet you.
I am so glad. I'm excited to dive into your unique story today. Before we get in there, can you share with us what are you excited about?
So I have been on a mission for the last few years to spread awareness around the power of self-compassion to as many people as I can. I think that it's a movement and it is fundamentally to help people understand that having a better relationship to ourselves positively impacts our relationships with other people, all in positive ways. And so every chance I get to talk about that and share my perspective and my expertise on it, it's a good day. And so I'm excited to be here to be able to do that with you.
I got that sense right away from you. Like, I got the chills when you just said that.
Thanks.
And
a little bit.
To have the self-compassion, can you dive a little bit more where, because we have self-compassion for ourselves, how does that help others?
Well, the way that we treat ourselves impacts the way that we treat other people. And I think we'd all like to believe that that's not the case. But the research would show that it's fundamentally true.
Yeah.
And so then the question is, well, what kind of relationship do we want to have with ourselves? And how do we have a relationship with ourselves? And what does that look like? And then we have to ask ourselves, well, what is our current relationship? And oftentimes, because we're not actively thinking about this, it's not the kind of relationship that we want. So what do I mean by that? For you or anyone who's listening, if you think that if you spoke to other people the way that you speak to yourself, would you have friends? Would people want to hang out with you if you talk to the people the way that you talk to yourself? Mm-hmm. Most people would laugh at that question because they'd go, oh my God, no. I'm so hard on myself. I'm so critical. Nothing's ever good enough. I'm always socially comparing. I'm never satisfied. I always want more control, whatever it might be. Like, well, then that's the crux of the issue, right? Why do we treat ourselves so much more poorly than we treat other people? And why do we hold on to the myth that we're only treating ourselves badly, other people don't actually get impacted by it? It's fundamentally not true. Because all of the behaviors that we do that we want to change that make us a less effective communicator or manager or leader, it all comes back to the way that we are treating ourselves. How do we handle failure, setbacks, whether we're getting external validation that we seek or not, social comparison, it all comes back to the way that we're in relationship with ourselves. And by the way, Melinda, I'm not someone who I don't have a perfect relationship with myself either. I can be critical. I can be harsh. I'm guilty of all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
I also had the privilege and the opportunity to have this epiphany and learn about self-compassion. And it changed everything for me and it has for all the people that I work with that have been introduced to it. And just imagine a world where people had a more loving relationship with themselves. Like, what's possible? What could be different? I don't know exactly what that looks like, but I know it's not bad.
Right. It's going to be way better. I'm on that train. I'm on that movement with you. Let's
yeah,
go.
Girl.
Let's
yeah,
go.
Let's go. Yeah.
So how does that relate? Can you share one story about how you put this into practice on stage? How did you have self-compassion when things did not go well?
Yeah, I mean, I find that every time that that I'm on stage giving a keynote or addressing really any audience for that matter, there is an opportunity for me to practice self-compassion because I'm a human and mistakes happen. Sometimes they're in our control, sometimes they're not. But just last month, I was giving a keynote to a few hundred executives. And I noticed in the middle of the talk, I was in some like really impassioned part, and everybody, you know, they were like, I had them on pins and needles. And I noticed there was a typo on the slide. And I was like, oh shit. Cause, you know, these slides are really big up on stage. So I was like, if I saw it, I'm pretty sure that everyone else there saw it. And I knew there would be people in the room that were those that pride themselves on being nitpickers and being able to pick out typos on slides. So I was certain that they saw it. And it wasn't a scripted part of the talk, but I realized, well, this is a moment to actually demonstrate self-compassion because self-compassion has three main parts. The first is self-awareness, meaning I was aware in that moment that my inner critic was going wild. How could you have this typo? How come you didn't catch it? You looked at these slides a thousand times before. You've given this talk so many times before. What a fool. You embarrassed yourself, so on and so forth. The second thing is common humanity and a connection to the people. And what I realized in that moment is that this is not the first time this has happened to me. And then I'm not the only person that it's happened to. So I actually asked the audience, I said, does anybody else here notice this typo on the slide here? And everyone goes, oh, yeah. I said, just go ahead and raise your hand if you've ever been giving a presentation and you had a typo on your slide.
That's a good one.
And every single person's hand went up in the room, or at least, you know, it looked that way, right? Most people. And I said, great, this is an opportunity for us to all practice self-compassion because what I realize is that I'm not alone in this. I'm not the only person that this happened to.
Oh, I love
And while
that.
I wish it wasn't the case, it doesn't have to detract from the outcome that I'm trying to achieve here with this audience, which is it's about the message. It's not about these slides being perfect. So me being able to catch myself and not beat myself up, which probably would have resulted in me not finishing the talk strong. It actually drew them in more to see like, oh, this is this person practicing it and acknowledging we make mistakes and I'm not alone in that. And the way that I can course correct is by self-managing so that I finish the strongest, you know, finish strong as opposed to becoming really self-aware in the moment. And then I'm stumbling on my words and, you know, the whole thing falls apart. And those things, they just come up. But there was a collective sense of relief in the room by this recognition that it's like, oh, I've done that too. But now I also realize I'm not alone because I saw everyone else's hands go up,
Yes,
right?
powerful moment.
Because those are the little seeds of shame that we take with us throughout our careers. We make a mistake and we, you know, they kind of add up and we put them in this like little piggy bank of shame that we carry with us as leaders that we don't want anyone to know about and we certainly don't want to mention it or talk about it. But it happens. And gosh, I wish I could say that that was the only, you know, typo on the slide in that presentation. But to be honest, I think something happened when it was, you know, ported over into the other, you know, laptop before it was presented. But there was another slide where
Got
it
it.
happened
Right.
again. Like, okay, you know, we'll pivot and we'll roll with it. And later in that talk, I read a declaration of self-compassion that's in my book as an example. It's like to put these things into words is very different than to hear someone talk about it. You can hear me talk about self-compassion, but when you say to yourself, this is what it's going to look like for me to practice self-compassion, it becomes more real because now you're putting into your own words as opposed to yet another, you know, quote unquote expert telling me what I'm supposed to do to, you know, make my life better. And that was just intended for me to share it as an example. And when I was done, and I'm happy to read it here too if it'd be helpful, Melinda, but after I finished reading the declaration, someone in the audience raised their hand and they asked, would it be okay if we all read that declaration together? And so me and several hundred leaders all read this declaration. And each of those people were saying the words to themselves, for themselves, practicing compassion for the pressure that they feel, the responsibility they feel as executives and the people that they're responsible for. And at the end of that, there was a very palpable shift of energy in the room, mm-hmm. because it went from somebody on stage telling them about the importance of something. For them, they had a very visceral reaction to what it felt like to say these words of kindness mm-hmm. to themselves that they have not maybe said ever or very rarely.
I love that. I mean, for them to have that visceral sense and shift. And I think you're right. I mean, because a lot of these leaders, executives, they put so much pressure on themselves, on other people, and then not even really understanding or realize the impact that they have when they, because I think they're always on the chase. They're always on the go, trying to meet objectives. There's just a lot of pressure. And the reality is the pressure can also be too much. And then we forget to have self-compassion when things don't go as planned, which will happen a lot these days. And so how do we treat ourselves when, not if, but when things don't go as planned?
Yeah. And I think people often mistake self-compassion for self-pity or a sign of weakness.
Yeah.
And it's the complete opposite is true. And all of the research that's been done over the last 20 years around self-compassion, those that have a regular practice of it are actually more resilient in the face of adversity.
Yeah.
They have a greater ability to be agile in learning and take greater responsibility for their contribution to something. So
yeah.
it actually promotes the qualities that we want, but we have to get over this kind of disbelief that by being kind to ourselves that we'll lose our competitive edge.
Right.
That's fundamentally not true.
I totally agree. Right. Because I think if they think that, oh, we lose that, they're going to lose our competitive edge. We're too nice to ourselves. We're going to slack off.
Yeah. Yeah. And it makes sense. I can understand why somebody would think, like, being nice to myself, like, then I, you know, well, then maybe I won't care as much. It's like, no, the complete opposite is true.
Yeah.
It's because beating ourselves up doesn't actually make us more effective.
No, right. That's a thing. Right.
We think it does until we interrogate that idea and go, wait a second, every time I've been really hard on myself, did I actually do better as a result? Or did I just, you know, feel like that self-punishment was deserving because I did something wrong?
And usually what I find is when I'm in that mode of self-punishment or critical, then I can go into a situation with that lens. Oh my gosh, I'm going to mess up. Oh no, this has to be perfect. And then when I'm in that state of everything has to be perfect, this is not going to go well, then it has more likelihood to have that outcome.
Yes. It's like when you're riding a bike or a
Right.
motorcycle, you want to look to where you're going to go.
Yes.
Right. Well, if you're looking for the problems or the things to trip on, then you'll probably trip.
Right. And how do you handle with being less, trying to be less, you know, more compassion, more like imperfection on stage? I sometimes will still struggle with that in terms of, I want to hit all these points. I put a lot of pressure with myself to can you share some of your techniques to just be more you?
Yeah. Well, so much of it is what's my mindset going into it.
Yeah.
So I like to come into every speaking engagement with the true appreciation for the work that I have done to put myself in that position,
yeah,
and a true sense of gratitude for the opportunity.
Yeah.
Like, really internalize that. I think it's easy to throw out, you know, oh, I'm so grateful, but to really internalize both gratitude for the opportunity and appreciation for the hard work that I've put in to be able to be in that position, right? It's a bit of both.
And how did you come up with all of these concepts? Like, is it through meditation? Is it through spirituality? I'm just curious. Is it just reflection? Is it
all of the above?
Got it.
You know, through education, through experience, through just time.
Yeah.
You know, I remember in graduate school, I was a little bit older than some of the other students that were there. And one of them came up to me and said, you know, I want to be able to do what you're doing. And I said, the only difference between you and me is time. Meaning the only difference is that I've been doing this longer than you.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I have more experience and more knowledge. And so you perceive me as being better. I'm not better. I just am further along the journey than you are at this point in time. Mm-hmm. And what's cool is I ran into that that woman just last year. I hadn't seen her in, 15 years or something. And she said, that stuck with me. And I have shared that same wisdom with countless other people in my own career.
Yeah.
And so I don't have a silver bullet. I don't think of myself as a special person in any way whatsoever. I think the measure of a person is, can you get back up, after getting knocked down? And I've been knocked down a lot, and I just keep getting back up and learn from those things. You know, it's not just about, can you endure, punishment to get back up, but can you learn from the fall? And I try to learn from every one of those falls. And to get to your question about, being authentic on stages, the more humanity I can show on stage, the more authentically me I can be by, if a mistake is there, hey, let's call it out. I think that's important. And I try and humanize myself by even sharing, like, here are my shortcomings. Here are the things that a younger version of myself would never want you to know about me.
Yeah.
And I'm not sharing it because I'm trying to, vulnerability bomb you. I'm sharing it because I'm not ashamed of it. Yeah. And you may have something like that too. And I don't want you to be ashamed of that either. Because it's, you're just being human,
And I think the people that are on this journey of, sometimes we have these situations that put us in these type of, where we can make a choice to hide it or to share it, right? I think, like, I've had so many recently situations where I was almost forced to be like, in that moment, am I going to try to hide this imperfection or am I going to share it and connect with other people? And I love what you did was raise your hand if you've ever felt this way and let's just all connect at this level. And so I love, having that in my back pocket because I know there's going to be other moments where things don't go the way I want. And then so I have opportunity at that moment to, like you said, like you connect, share it, even, not to try to make people, it's just because it's a part of me because I'm not, I'm accepted of it. It's more of me showing and leading by example that we're.
Yeah. I guess that's one of the benefits of talking about self-compassion, Melinda, is that there's lots of opportunities to say, hey, case in point. Here it is. This just happened. But one thing that you know to be true, that I know to be true, is that when we are transparent and we share, it invites other people to do the same.
Yeah.
And this is not... this isn't the type of work that we do in isolation. Self-compassion isn't a selfish act. It's something that we can actually do, in community.
Yeah.
And we do that by sharing here are my hopes and dreams and here are my fears and self-doubts. And here are the things that I'm feeling, which are complex and they're varied, but we just met. But I know for a fact that you have felt joy in your life and happiness and sadness and despair and loneliness. Why do I know these things? Because you're a human. And where we get lost as leaders and executives is we disassociate from those things. Well, now that I have this title or this pay or this size organization, I shouldn't be feeling these things anymore. So I'm going to distance myself from them, as opposed to realizing we're all human. When there's uncertainty, we can feel fear. That's normal. That makes sense. And once we are aware of what that feeling is and we can actually name it in a tangible way, then we can do something with it. And that's the empowering piece of this, right? If we make a mistake on stage, if I name what it is, well, now I'm not alone in the shame of what it is. Now it's something that's like, hey, it's ours. Mm-hmm. How can we make this a learning opportunity?
Yeah.
I hope that I will never use that as a crutch, but I do think it's a powerful rubric for, creating value in learning. Mm-hmm.
I love it. We're doing it together. I have one more question before the last question. And I don't know if if this is part of your book, but how is compassion, self-compassion, tied to self-forgiveness?
Yeah, they're really closely related. I think that Self-compassion is about being able to offer ourselves empathy, understanding what it is that we're feeling, and then do something to support that or alleviate that. You know, if it's a negative feeling, what can I do to make myself feel better? And in a productive way. I'm not talking about like a escapist behavior, like you know, shopping makes me feel better. Like that's, you know, not necessarily a healthy, sustainable thing to do, or kind of vices. And in that, in the practice of self-compassion, we end up uncovering the things that that we're holding on to that we need to forgive ourselves for, because they're often signals of, you know, a difficult feeling that we're having. So they're really closely related. And self-forgiveness is an incredibly powerful thing to do. It's very difficult. You know, before starting my my coaching firm, I spent my career in the corporate world, and I got fired. You know, it wasn't a restructuring. I can't hide behind any, you know, story of, you know, it was just the business decision. And it was awful. And I realized that I had so much shame around it and guilt that I didn't want to talk about it, and it was something I didn't want people to know. But I had to forgive myself so that I could do that, because I didn't want that to be something that I felt like I needed to hide. Then it would still own me. Right? It would have power over me, as opposed to it's something that happened, and I, you know, you learn from it. But I also wanted to forgive other people that were a part of it, because I didn't want to hold on to resentment towards them either. And yeah, it's they are really closely related. And self-forgiveness is a tricky thing, you know. But if you can do the hard work to actually get through it, it's very freeing to the things that we once had shame about, to be able to just own them as a part of, like, that's a part of my story, you know. And if you're going to share your story, I'm happy to tell you about all the highs, but if you're going to hear those, then you should probably hear about the lows too, you know, because no one's story is as clear as our resume suggests, where it's just like high point, high point, high point. But that's not the whole story.
Oh, it's so powerful. I love that. And what would be out of all of this, because you've shared so much wonderful insight with compassion and self-compassion and letting go of perfection and also just that last piece with forgiveness. What would be that one leadership golden takeaway that you want the audience to remember?
This idea of being kind to ourselves can be really difficult. And so sometimes it's easier to start from a kind of a positive place. And the inverse is like, when do I trust myself most? And so I would encourage the people listening, if they journal or have some sort of reflective exercise, to ask themselves, when do I trust myself most? What are the conditions that exist when I trust myself most? And what do I notice that is different about me when I'm coming from a place of self-trust? Whether it be how I communicate, how I make decisions, how I relate to other people, because that's what we should all be striving for. And self-trust is something that is in our control, you know? And oftentimes when we don't trust ourselves, it's because we're stuck in social comparison. And if we're always trying to see how we stack up to other people, then we can't trust ourselves, because we're not actually basing it off of who we are. We're basing it off of who someone else is.
So we want to anchor in on those moments, right? There are those moments that you do trust yourself because, then it could start to get so confusing when you're looking to other outside sources. So anchoring back to the trust within ourselves and those times when you did trust yourself.
Yeah, and when we a mistake happens on stage, we want to be able to trust ourselves. Like, all is not lost, you know? This is just a pivot.
That is what I tell people when we're practicing about public speaking or talking about public speaking. It's not the practice of your talking points. It's the practice of trusting yourself. That's what you want to practice. Love
Beautifully said.
it. Wonderful. Thank you, Massimo. Really appreciate your time and your expertise. And so can you share more about how people can find you? You could talk about your book.
MassimoBacchus.com. I just Google Massimo Bacchus. I think I'm the only one that's out there. And my book is called Human First, Leader Second: How Self-Compassion Outperforms Self-Criticism. And please check it out. And I again, I'm on a mission to spread the word about this. I see a world where We all are better equipped at having a kind and loving relationship to ourselves. That is the world that I want to live in.
I'm with you. I'm with you. Let's go there. Thank you so much. Let's do that. And I imagine that world where we can have more self-compassion for ourselves. And that is truly where we're gonna make more change and better change.
Yeah. And Melinda, thank you so much. I love what you're doing with this podcast
Thank
and,
you.
opportunities to kind of take a peek behind the curtain, the things that look glossy on the surface and
Yeah.
hear about what's really going on is great.
Really, no, I think that people on the outside will see, oh, they've all got it all together. Well, the reason why is because we've had to work through all of these challenges and to show self-compassion to ourselves, which therefore, leads to better leadership. And thank you so much. And thank you so much, audience, for being here. I trust that you got your takeaway, implement them right away. And until next time, I am your sister in flow. May prosperity flow to you, through you, and onto others. Take care. Lots of love. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, Massimo.
Bye, thank you.
Thank you.
That's a wrap on today's Speak and Flow podcast. I hope that you've gained valuable insights to help you communicate with more clarity, connection, and confidence. Before you go, let me ask you this. Can your team communicate your founder story in a way that strengthens relationships and builds your company brand? If not, I've got a tool for you. Introducing, it's an AI founder's story creator. This is a tool to help you craft a compelling story instantly that you can share with your team, and therefore your team can share with lots of people, building your brand. Grab this tool. In addition to creating immediately your founder story, you're also going to get one-on-one coaching with me so that we can continue to refine the story so that it's in alignment with your company messaging. Click on the link in the show notes, grab it today, and until next time, keep leading with confidence and courage.